There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And the first thing I did was quit my job in this fashion industry. And it was, you know, the bravest thing my husband has ever done is sort of being okay with this, because, you know, a lot of Scandinavia is built on, all of Scandinavia is so expensive. It is built on two incomes, you know, two full-time incomes. So this was a massive step for him as well, to start changing his mind shift, to start changing his mind about, because he's also conditioned, you know, from this culture to believe that certain things have to be a certain way. And of course, you know, me coming in and saying nothing has to be any kind of way was very challenging for him. But when we met in the middle, you know, that I became a little more grounded and he became a little more free, and we met in this this beautiful sweet spot in the middle, we started sort of co-creating this life together and becoming very conscious as to what we were letting in and what we were letting out of our life. And through this meeting in the middle, we basically went through some pretty bizarre changes to our life. We sat down and we said, what are the core values we have as a couple for this family? And we came up with three totally solid, you know, values that no matter how different me and my husband are, and we are incredibly different, these things are like, well, they are the roots to our relationship, and they're really what brings us together on everything. And this was family, it was freedom, and it was travel.
How you day? That was the voice of Cez Christensen. Now, Cez is one of my favorite guests, and she's one of my favorite guests because of how raw and honest she is. You know, as you heard in the taping before this, she and her husband went through a moment of deep introspection, which led to what the rest of her lives was going to be like. But in our interview, we dove into many facets of her life, right? The very various aspects of what it takes to be a TCK and succeed and thrive in today's world with all the multiple identities. You know, she says something that's so deep, and it's the title of this episode. She says she wondered how to live an undefined life in a defined culture. That's where many of us are today. You know, we feel like there's a defined culture, but we are undefined ourselves. How do you navigate through the chaos sometimes and the ambiguity sometimes, right? Those are some of the things that we dive into in today's episodes. She's an amazing writer. I'm going to put the links to her books in the show notes. And I also encourage you all to follow her on social media as well as sign up to her newsletters. All right, enjoy the episode. Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's episode is with an amazing lady and her fellow third culture kid, Cez Christensen. Now, I'll let her tell you her story, but in short, she's an author and poet who has had an inception level of TCK experiences, and we're going to be talking about what it's like to stay grounded after a long life spent as a nomad and how to simultaneously find freedom in business and entrepreneurship while trying to express yourself. Obviously, we live in a very nuanced world, also a very multicultural world. Sometimes it can feel like boxes are where you should be. But today we're going to be breaking out of those boxes and talking about how to do that. Welcome to the show, Cez.
Thank you so much for having me, Tayo. It's such a pleasure. Thank you.
The pleasure is mine. I feel like we're going to be so enthusiastic.
I really do as well. I know.
Well, why don't you get us started with your story? Because I feel like you tell it best. You talk about generations of being a third culture kid, but where does it all start for you?
Well, so I am the third generation in my family to be a third culture kid. My parents, they were born in Zambia and Zimbabwe, but their heritage comes from a mix of Dutch and Polish, British and Scottish. And my grandparents, they all landed up in Southern Africa after the Second World War for many different reasons. But my parents, they met over Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe on the border. And they had three kids, including myself. So I was born pretty isolated peach farm in northern Johannesburg in the mid-80s. And you know, this was obviously the time during the apartheid. And as a kid, like, I was super, super sensitive to everything that was going around. And I fell upon this tool of poetry, basically trying to make sense of these thoughts I was having and these emotions that I couldn't quite explain as a child. So I've kind of always used poetry to simplify my life, you know, using it to condense my thoughts and emotions, especially when I can't literate them. But yeah, we spent 8 years on this farm in Johannesburg. And like I said, really fairly isolated until my dad got another job and it took us to Cape Town. And really from then, we had a very a highly mobile life from then onwards. My dad was so determined to get his children and his family out of South Africa at that point in time. And he was doing everything basically in his power to get a job that would take him away. And that eventually came when I was about 15 years old. And he got a job in the UK. And to me at this point, I was like, I didn't really feel like a belonging to South Africa because my family come from this crazy mix of different cultures. And, you know, we weren't Afrikaans and I went to English schools. And so we had this move to the UK. And I really thought that because my dad was half British, there would be this kind of sense of belonging in this country. And of course, you know, a teenager landing up in a small village school in the Midlands, it was a really tough move. It was such a tough move for me. And again, I fell back onto this tool of poetry, writing poetry. And by this point, like, I had books and books and books of poetry. And that kind of formed into writing books, like novels, as I grew older. And it was this outlet I get, I guess this escapism that I used that really helped sort of dispense everything that was going on in my mind and this sort of confusion about where I belonged onto paper. So really didn't get this feeling of belonging in the UK. And in fact, it kind of made me into quite a rebellious teenager. I really, you know, kind of rejected the society and the rules and the school. So I was pretty naughty when I was a teenager. And it kind of made me think, by the time I got to 18 years old, I was like, that's my freedom point. And I really wanted to go back to Southern Africa. I really wanted to go traveling and find out if it was true that I wasn't South African and that I didn't belong there. I wanted to revisit all the homes that I'd grown up in and sort of revisit the culture and see how much had changed in those 5 years that I was in the UK. So I did. I went back when I was 18 years old on my own down to Zimbabwe, Zambia, traveled around South Africa. Literally went back to every house that I'd grown up in and kind of came across that heartbreaking, soul-tearing moment of realizing that everything had changed, and it, you know, including myself. And I couldn't recognize anything in myself in this country. My homes were literally like the peach farm had been turned into a shopping mall. You know, this place that was very isolated back then was now part of this massive community. It was very built up. And like all those ideas that you have and those memories you have of being a child and having this freedom in this, you know, South African bush, it like disappeared in an instant. So it kind of brought about this closure in myself that there was no place of belonging for me in these places that I had lived. And because I didn't want to go back to the UK, I essentially spent the next 10 years of my life traveling and on this resolute mission to become a part of everything. You know, if I couldn't find acceptance or belonging in these places that I had lived, I would make it my mission to go traveling to some of, honestly, the most obscure places on the planet. And apart from 4 years that I spent at university, I spent a long time traveling and living in some rather peculiar destinations. And I really did find this incredible sense of freedom through this. Like, you can land up in a hostel or even to, you know, the jobs that I was using to afford my travels. You could turn up there and they'd ask you where you're from. And I could literally, I could feel like I could say anything and I could relate to something with every single person I met, no matter what culture. It really became this kind of skill, finding this commonality in really kind of diverse places. And after, you know, as I kept traveling, I was working from job to job, and then I afforded another, you know, 4 months of travel, and then I land up somewhere else. And I traveled a lot around Australia, and I landed up in Samoa for far too long, really. It's one of these places that, you know, island life, just kind of the quicksand and the lack of change. It's, you know, really, it's quite an amazing place. But after a while, I kind of felt the need for change. And I went back to Sydney. And it was at this point that I kind of realized I had a slight issue with escapism, you know, like if things got tough or I didn't like the job, or it was, you know, things got difficult, or I broke up with someone, I could literally pack my bag and start again in a different country, a different town. And this kind of became the way I lived for a good 10 years. And of course, this was intervened by a Viking, literally. I met, as they do, they have a habit of this, but I met a Danish guy when I was traveling around Queensland in Australia. And we had this really crazy year and a half of long distance relationship. And because he was probably the most stable person I have ever met, you know, he's literally the personification of roots and cultural roots and family roots. And he was so grounded. He was such a solid guy. And, you know, I was literally the opposite. I had very little identity, I guess. I was like this moving sponge that was kind of soaking up different cultures. And I really fell in love with this this idea of roots and being grounded, and of course him. So after this year and a half long relationship, we we came to the point that these relationships often come to where you have to say, you know, is this worth moving? Someone has to give up something, and somebody has to move to each other's country. And we were just too into, you know, we were just too different, basically. And he continued studying his master's, and I moved to Barcelona to do a English language course. Another, you know, one of these creative ideas I had. So I was living there for a good 6 months when I got a knock on the door, and I opened the door to see a boy with a backpack and a one-way ticket and a smile on his face. And he wanted to know if, you know, we could see where this was going. Yeah, and basically since that point, that really pivotal point in my life, it's kind of the start of me becoming a little more rooted in myself. And he got posted out to Sri Lanka. Basically, as soon as we started living together, he got this job opportunity to build fishing harbors, you know, marine infrastructure in remote parts of Sri Lanka. So he invited me to come with him. And I was like, yeah, of course, you know, I'd never been there. And we had this incredible 2 years of living in a country that was literally, it had just come out of 30 years of civil war. And it was a really incredible time to be part of this this culture that hadn't seen foreigners for such a long time. And during these 2 years, we got married and I fell pregnant with my first child. So this was a point that we kind of looked at each other and said, okay, we need to have some stability. We need to do this thing called settling down. And so we moved back to Denmark, to his home country. And we had my child. And this at this point in my life, it was it was very, very difficult. You know, coming from where I'd come from and the life that I'd had, and that kind of freedom, and basically stepping into a lot of paradoxes, because Danish culture is you know, it's very particular about how it sees foreigners and immigrants. And, you know, they kind of base success of integration on how Danish you are, basically. You know, as if you learn the language and you adopt their customs and you abide by the conformity they have here, which is extremely strong, you are considered, you know, integrated. But I found, like, the more that I did that here, the more I suffered and the more I lost whatever I thought was who I was. So as well as being a new mother, learning this insane language and working, I got a job in like some serious cutthroat fashion industry that was like 60 hours a week of work. I struggled with this identity clash. And I stopped writing, you know, throughout the years that I'd been traveling. I have up to the ceiling books and books of journals of my travels. You know, it was almost obsessive. And I knew something was wrong, basically, after I realized I'd stopped writing for a good 3 years or so. So this all amounted to a massive amount of stress and sort of personal crisis, I guess. And it was 2 years after my son was born, I went through a debilitating psychosis, which, you know, along with the stress, this trigger, and as well as inherited sensitivities that I have in my family's mental health, you know, I basically snapped. And this process of healing that came after this episode has really been what changed everything in my life, because I had to reevaluate who I was, and I really got into learning more about consciousness and learning how to shift my mental state, and I got back into journaling my notes, you know, from not such a self-centered way that I had been doing for, you know, most of my life. This was a very introspective process. And I got back into poetry. And I started doing a lot of these things that helped me sort of navigate my own mind and my own identity and spirituality. You know, it helped a lot in finding some kind of guidance, some guidance system for me. And, you know, I can see that Sri Lanka had a lot to do with, you know, the Buddhist beliefs and their religious customs that kind of planted a few seeds in me. So I fell back on this ability to, to really use some of their mind tools, like meditation, to heal myself. And at this point, I was still working, still kind of getting used to being a mom. But I started volunteering at this non-profit organization here in Copenhagen called IMART. And it's this place where it's for immigrants and as well as, you know, Danish nationals. But it's this space held for people who are artists. And it's a way of, it's like an alternative integration. We have, you know, we have these meetings once a month where we get together and create dinner, or we could do like some poetry speeches, and everybody gets to network and share ideas. And it's this kind of bonding over this commonality that I loved so much, because I really felt like me being Danish, and the more Danish I was, the less happy I was. But being in this community of people that were all going through something similar, but who were sharing and getting through it through their creative art form. And some of that was poetry, some were painters, some were writers, whatever it was, there was this bond that sort of, that helped me really start putting some roots here. Because I could finally, like for the first time, I could see myself living here long term because of this community of people. And I also realized, you know, finding your home, it's not a place, it never is a place, but you can really access, as a third culture kid, you can access this home within you through creative expression, whatever that is, you know, whether it's cooking or writing. It really is this this incredible tool of coming back to yourself. So after I had been practicing this these tools for healing myself over a year, I became pregnant again with my second child and final child. And this is really like, this is the changer, because I was like, I'm bringing another little soul into this world, and I can't be this volatile anymore. I really have to know who I am, what I stand for, what my priorities are. And I have to show, more than just sort of saying what it is I want for my kids, I have to show them by doing it myself. And the first thing I did was quit my job in this fashion industry. And it was, you know, the bravest thing my husband has ever done is sort of being okay with this, because, you know, a lot of Scandinavia is built on, all of Scandinavia is so expensive. It is built on two incomes, you know, two full-time incomes. So this was a massive step for him as well, to start changing his mind shift, to start changing his mind about, because he's also conditioned, you know, from this culture to believe that certain things have to be a certain way. And of course, you know, me coming in and saying nothing has to be any kind of way was very challenging for him. But when we met in the middle, you know, that I became a little more grounded and he became a little more free, and we met in this this beautiful sweet spot in the middle, we started sort of co-creating this life together and becoming very conscious as to what we were letting in and what we were letting out of our life. And through this meeting in the middle, we basically went through some pretty bizarre changes to our life. We sat down and we said, what are the core values we have as a couple for this family? And we came up with three totally solid, you know, values that no matter how different me and my husband are, and we are incredibly different, these things are like, well, they are the roots to our relationship, and they're really what brings us together on everything. And this was family, it was freedom, and it was travel. And, you know, family to me is to have time with my kids, to actually have enough energy to be mindful with them. And freedom to both of us was just, you know, freedom of mind, body and soul, you know, that ability to find and be curious and have the time to work on yourself, that personal development and self-empowerment. You know, that was really important for us to find that freedom within ourselves and within our body. You know, I started running a couple of years ago, and this was something that also shifted a lot of things for me, because I have never run in my life and I still, you know, find it extremely challenging. But it's that way of putting your mental state into the track, and how you can literally work through your troubles by making it a physical experience rather than constantly keeping it in your head and, you know, imploding from it. And of course, that last core value we had was travel. Because at the end of the day, travel is my home. You know, that is where I feel like, you know, if I belong anywhere, it is everywhere. And I find nothing more expansive, especially being a mother now. I find nothing more important than showing my children the world, and not this kind of all-inclusive stuff that families are often so exhausted they land up booking, but really uncharted, adventurous, you know, soul-defying travel. So we basically, we designed our entire life. We recreated our life around these values. And it meant we gave up a house, this beautiful big house, white house, Danish house with an incredibly fat mortgage. We gave it up and we sold it, and we moved into a very tiny little apartment where I'm sitting right now. It's on the top floor of this building, and it's shared with 10 other couples. So it's like a commune, a collective, but you share a mortgage, so it is incredibly cheap to live in. And they have these kinds of apartments in the city here, but you have to be on some inherited list, you know, from like five generations to be on one of these lists. And of course, Mass being my husband, being himself, he was on one of these lists. So we got this apartment. We had this leftover money from the house. And because we're both born on farms and nature is incredibly important to us, we bought a little piece of land in the wilderness in northwest Denmark, and it's just by the coast. And we hand built a little cabin for our family to be able to spend time together in nature. You know, because I go a bit crazy being in the city. It's not very comfortable for me. I'm very at home with kind of expanse. So this was one of these fundamental things that we changed, was to spend more time in this cabin as a family. And literally, you know, my kids have been hammering stuff into stuff, you know, for 2 years now, building this little cabin. And of course, we discussed what it was that I was going to do, right, with my life now, and how I was going to be fulfilled, but also financially contribute to create more options in our life. And I really struggled with this, because I've never really been defined by a job. I've had a lot of very peculiar jobs in my life, and I really didn't know what this purpose of mine was supposed to be. And of course, you know, while I'm trying to figure this out, I was journaling and writing poetry, you know, and really like I'm trying to get this. I really need to know what it is I'm supposed to do with my life, and what's going to make how am I going to contribute to the world, to my children's lives, and beyond, you know. And I just sat back one day looking at all these journals that I had compiled over the last few years, and I opened my laptop and I started writing this nonfiction 70,000 word novel about freedom in motherhood. And this was, you know, this suddenly felt like Probably the most amount of freedom I have ever had in my life was writing this book, because I had wished for so long to read a book that would help me through being who I was, coming from where I was. And, you know, I felt like this was just too niche, like nobody's going to read something like this. And the more I wrote, the more I could see, you know, this is not just me. This is anybody, literally any mother who has ever struggled with freedom and becoming a parent and having that paradox of literally physical restriction, things that are keeping you, mostly your mind, but also like literally the physical part of being a mother and not being able to go out when you want or travel when you want. And I wrote this book because I really wanted to read it. You know, I wanted to read what it was like to find freedom and be a free spirit and keep that little piece of who you are in motherhood and not let that piece go, because it's very common that we settle with life. We let things go after we become a parent that we used to love, because you're just too tired. You know, it's exhausting and you've got this job. And then, you know, the moment I let go of that job, I realized this is what has been sucking up my energy for so many years, is this unfulfilling work. So this book has been like this incredible journey condensed into a book that will, I really hope, resonate with other people. And I really felt like, you know, I had written 70,000 words, and then I was like, okay, now I got to get it published, right? Because this.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This kind of book needs editing. I'm not an editor. I don't, you know, it needs help from more skilled people. And like, I started reading about what the likelihood of getting published was, and it was just like nil. You know, as I'm sure you know, it's very, very difficult to find somebody of the right genre to get your book out. And, you know, it's like a 5% chance that a publisher is even going to be interested. And I was so determined. Like, I have never been so determined in my life that this was gonna be. It was just gonna be. I had written this book from my soul, you know, it was crafted from my soul, and it had to mean something. And I sent it out, and I was crossing my fingers. I was literally, you know, hiding a little bit, you know, to so scared to open my laptop every day. And of course, you come back with you have to deal with a lot of rejection, a lot of comments, a lot of sort of remarks about people's opinions of it. And I really learned to change. Like, what I would used to do would be escape, you know, okay, that's not for me. Somebody doesn't like the book. That's it. I'm out of here. I'm not doing that. And I was like, no, stop. See if their comments are valid. Can they help you? Are they actually giving you some really valuable advice? Or is it just up to you to let it go? And every time I got some negativity back, I would ask myself those two questions. Is this useful, or can I actually let it go? And I started building up this this resilience, I guess, that I've never had before. And in the end I got three offers of traditional publishing, and I went with you'll laugh, but I went with TCK Publishing, You know, I know. I was like, this is a sign. This has got to be, of course. Yeah, but of course, as I'm sure you know as well, it's a long process, this being published. And in that time, I decided to condense my poetry books while I was going through that difficult period, and I was trying to find myself again. I condensed these books, these poems, into a poetry book, which has also just come out now. And it's just basically, yeah, it's like two sides of my life, this motherhood and being grounded and finding who I really was, and, you know, basically choosing who I wanted to be, and also this process of healing, which is, you know, using feminine energy, which is basically allowing your healing to occur, but also letting the darkness in you, the pain, all those challenges teach you something, instead of trying to be like this quick fix, which is a very masculine energy. It's sort of telling you to keep going, keep contributing, get back to your fullness. And it's like, it's not a plaster. It's a process to heal yourself, and it takes time, and it takes letting go and surrendering to the message that your pain is trying to show you. So this was the poetry book that I've written. But yeah, you know, in the end, I really believe that freedom is a choice. It is a choice, no matter how much you believe you're incarcerated by motherhood, by parenthood, by your job, by your finances, you know, even by your mind. I believe that you have the choice to liberate yourself. And it all starts with those incremental steps and being conscious to your life and what is your life and what is being and what was conditionings. You know, a lot of us have very deep conditionings that we believe that, you know, those are our choices, but they're not. They often happen to be from past experiences. And especially as, you know, TCKs, there's a lot of unusual conditionings, you know, from your life. But I really believe that you get to choose which ones you want to take with you, that you don't have to be defined by being undefined, really, you know, that you get to choose. Yeah.
So it's interesting hearing you talk, because I wanted it to be that way, to sort of give us a narrative spiel from there, because you can hear the many lifetimes you've lived, one.
Yeah, I know.
and you can also see how deeply important it is to be self-aware. You know, you bring up self-awareness and consciousness. The idea of you acknowledging where your true north is and where you feel at your highest zone of genius with your writing is so key in your story, because just because your journaling allows you to reflect. Even when you were transitioning from writing more about self to experiences, you found a balance in between there. And I do appreciate that. But I also think it's a metaphor for life, in terms of how when people grow older, you know, you lose that sense of wonder and creativity, and you become conditioned to do what you think society wants you to do. And you coming back to writing, you having that episode with mental health, which is also another thing, by the way, which isn't discussed often, but the way you talked about it was so beautiful. I mean, you highlighted it, and you said you had an episode, but you said you learned from it.
Well, this is the thing, right? You know, that these things are here to teach us, you know, as I really believe there are two things that make us better people, and it is books and children. You know, what your bookshelf says about you and what your children say about you, they are reflections of you, and they really give us a chance to become better people, because you have to make that choice. You know, my son will ask me, who's God? What is God? And then, you know, you come off with the same thing that your parents told you, which is what the same thing as their parents told you. But then, you know, you start questioning. You allow that little bit of questioning to come into your life. And it's the most beautiful thing, because I suddenly thought, well, hang on, who do I believe in? You know, well, is this really true? Or is this something that has happened, has been told to me from my past? So you're, you know, and I love the fact that you said you're true north. You know, we spend so much of our life fighting, you know, for finances, for a better life. And it's this, this idea of true north. It's a very individual element, and your true north is unconventional. It's who you are. It's your alignment with who you really are, and finding that is the most liberating thing you can do, because a lot of our life is going to a direction that your society or your culture has told you is north. Like, this is north. This is where you got to keep going. You got to go to university. You got to get a proper job that pays this amount, and it's got to be in this field. But that is not your true north. You know, your true north is your skills and your desires and who you really are. So I really love that. You know, I love that metaphor.
No, absolutely. And I was basically getting the energy off of you, because I think it's an amazing, you know, sense of awareness for you to have that, because honestly, a lot of people aren't aware of who they are, honestly, as you grow older. And in both of our line of work, both as being TCKs and poets and authors, a lot of times I think at least the best authors and the best poets are able to translate what they listen to and observe into something that could be simultaneously personal and universal, right?
So it's absolutely like,
and you, by the way, I just got your book. So
I'm thank getting, you. I'm, healing yeah, her,
healing her,
poetry healing that her.
Nourishes. yeah, poetry that nourishes the soul through feminine energy. Healing yes. her, and we'll put that in the show notes. But
thank you so much, yeah.
You're so welcome, and I'm super eager to read it. But what I was saying with that is it's you talking of self-care type of way. And the self-care leads to soul alignment, and that ultimately leads to grounding. And especially for the listeners who are, you know, maybe in transition, whether it's physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, it starts with self, and then obviously figuring out how to stay true to that person. The other equation for you though, is the amazing, I guess, journey that you and your husband took, you know, the idea. Yeah, because that is always missing. It's not always present in many people's lives. The fact that you and your husband were able to come to that agreement where you had your, despite being different, you had your principles that you would always abide by, and you made life changes. according to those things, I was too young to have remembered Sweden, but from what my parents told me about Sweden, which is also another Scandinavian country, the idea of expenses was something that they always brought up. It's like, it's very expensive. You always have to, does the government pay for like school and all these things, exactly. But everything else is expensive.
Yeah.
And you're saying that you downgraded your life to upgrade your lifestyle.
Absolutely. You know, this is the land of minimalism, but I also find it's the land of irony, you know, because there is this physical minimalism that they're very into, but they're highly they're very complex people, and it's a very complex culture, and they're very you know, they're very defined, and it's very scary to be an undefined person in a very defined culture, because you're constantly having to fit yourself into these ideals. But it is that liberation when you decide to, you know, I really believe that to live in a culture, you need to know the language, you need to know the law, and you need to be creative and keep that piece of you, that difference, to, you know, keep it active. And other than that, you know, what else do you really need? All those customs and those little, you know, awkward things and those ideals, they're just conformity that you don't need to. It's not for you.
Yeah, but that's brilliant. And I, you know, however way you say it, minimalism, downgrading your life to upgrade your lifestyle, or downgrading your lifestyle to upgrade your life, whichever one you choose, that irony is a beautiful thing that I think takes courage. It takes moral courage. It's essentially to live according to your best self, but also to have the dignity to do that. Because there comes a time when you feel comfortable with certain things. And you convince yourself there's a family involved. There's a lifestyle that comes with this. What would others say? Especially the what will others say when you're thinking about different cultures. And I admire your bravery to say, you know what, I'm quitting this fashion job. It's really bearing me down. I'm going to go back to my writing. I'm going to take the time to find the right publishing house, and I'm just going to do what's best for me. And even with your children, the ability to say, I'm not going to say what my parents normally would say. I'm going to allow for exploration and allow the curiosity to be cultivated.
Absolutely. Do you know, I just, when everyone who knows me knows that I'm like the girl, especially, you know, to friends who are mothers, I'm the girl who makes other people want to rebel a little bit, you know, and I could not be more proud of that statement. If I can make somebody just rebel a little bit against either, you know, their culture or themselves, or, you know, it's just the most liberating place to be, is when you start rebelling a little bit against what is normal, and you really can't stop. You know, you get to a point that you start questioning everything and you start rebelling a little bit against everything. So I'm really in trouble with my kids when they turn teenagers. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do.
You know, I have this conversation with my mom too, because my parents are Nigerian. Well, I mean, we're all Nigerian, but you know, it's the same sort of thing where it's a very rich culture, but there are certain ways, certain monikers, a lot of, you know, extended family type of things. What would you, you know, what is considered respect is how will others see you sometimes. And when my dad's job as a diplomat started to take us all over the world, I don't think they were quite ready for my rebellious nature to be activated, because I questioned everything, and I still do. They didn't know how to respond. I'm like, what? You're supposed to be able to preserve your Nigeria. Like, just go there and come back here. Now we joke about it, but I was the only one out of my, I have two younger brothers who I just used to always do that, and I would get in so much trouble. And now they ironically to say, you know, now I understand.
But yeah, exactly. In hindsight, hindsight's beautiful.
It is. But it was so funny. I was like, and I also understand also, because we grew up initially in two military dictatorships, so it's kind of the idea of questioning something could take your life away.
Yeah, I mean.
I wanted to harp in on something before we close, because I definitely want to give you a chance to talk about it. I know you have Healing Her out now, right? And then you have another book coming out soon. Yes. So before we talk about that, I want to highlight, you know, why, you know, Nelson Mandela is a hero of yours and what your experience was like with apartheid, because we both share Nelson Mandela and Oprah, two of our biggest inspirations. But I'm curious from your point of view and your perspective, what that was like.
Well, like I said, for the first 8 years of my life, I was on this peach farm in northern Johannesburg. So we were extremely isolated. I had a very sheltered upbringing. We didn't have the rules that were enforced throughout the country at that point. And I also had, you know, I came from a very innocent sort of upbringing, where my parents were very they were very against what was going on, but they also had very little to do with it. And we had, you know, as all South Africans had at the time, we had people who helped. You know, I was literally brought up by two nannies, and me and my brother and sister, we were brought up by these people who were our family. You know, they were the closest thing I had. My parents were working full time. You know, my dad was trying to get us out of South Africa. And, you know, they were all Southern African, you know, from Zambia and Zimbabwe. So we had this sheltered, and, you know, it's hard because when I look back at it, I feel quite ignorant because of my innocence. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I was very sheltered from it. And we left after we were in Cape Town when Nelson Mandela was freed, and that's, you know, that started happening. And the country, you know, it was such a volatile place to be. A lot of my childhood, I remember quite violent break-ins into both our farm house and some of the other properties we lived in, and these things were normal. You know, these were very normalized in my childhood. Bomb scares. You know, I don't know if you had the same thing, but we went through bomb drills every week in my school. Wow. So it was, but you know, like, I don't question it because that's just what we had to do. And like I say, we left to the UK, and my parents had very little to do with South Africa afterwards. And of course, I had to educate myself on the apartheid after I had grown up a little bit. And you know, I really believe as a child, my sensitivities came through almost like an osmosis. You know, when you live in a culture and you don't quite understand it as a child, you still are very heavily affected by people's energy in that country. Yeah. And you know, my sensitivities to everything, I mean, the poetry I used to write, it just could not understand this need for separation. I could not fathom, from a child's perspective, I could not understand how people could treat each other this way. You know, when we watched the news or we heard on the radio, it was one of the most difficult things I can remember trying to get a hold of, like these emotions that came to me and I couldn't explain them, you know, which is why this poetry has been such a form of healing for me, because yeah. you have to channel it in some way, or it comes out in other ways. But it was when I grew up that I started, you know, reading Nelson Mandela's book and his life story and the way he brought the country to, you know, the liberated state that he did, and his struggles and the way he grew up. You know, I really felt like this connection back with my childhood when I was a bit older, because I didn't know what was going on. But by educating myself, I feel like that ignorance kind of, it was almost not forgivable, you know, not forgiven, but yeah. understandable. And I, you know, I haven't stopped reading his book since. You know, it's been like this, it's been a connection to so much of my own life, and how, you know, finding yourself incarcerated in different environments, or, you know, mentally incarcerated, you know, this idea that you can find freedom even in incarceration is one that is, you know, it's an idea that is exceptional yeah. to me.
Life is full of paradoxes, and thank
absolutely.
You for sharing. Yeah. The greatest things I often find in those ironies, yeah. and that's the irony of life. And I appreciate you sharing that, because that's what I wanted to highlight there, because I thought I heard that initially when you said that. Yeah. But it's the idea, I feel like many of us don't forgive ourselves, which you even alluded yeah. to it, where you were talking about the ignorance. And it's ironic that your book is called Healing Her. I do think that we need to get to a point where we can forgive ourselves, whether it's out of whether it's ignorance, fear, or whatever we've done in the past, for us to grow. And I'm looking at this from the point of view from as a diversity and inclusion consultant, where I go into a lot of spaces with people from different backgrounds, and sometimes I get to see people's real life guilt, shame, addressed or just visibly manifested in front of me. Like, I can't believe that's what happened to her. That's what happened to you. And it's such an interesting thing to experience, because I've seen it go one or two ways, where maybe one person doesn't feel like they can do anything anymore, and then the other person feels like, well, now I have to act. I don't know. I'm just always curious about whether there are techniques we can actually apply to ourselves so that we can heal, learn, and accept, and then move on. It doesn't make us a bad person, but yeah.
Well, you know, I really feel like I've lived 1,000 lives, but you know, recently we've come across this, this revelation in our family that there were two more, brothers in my grandfather's family than everybody had talked about. So these two boys, they were, 15 and 20. They were put into a psychiatric ward, and nobody ever talked about them. You know, ever since that moment, they were sort of rejected from the family. And of course, in the 40s, you know, this was a time that people didn't talk about mental health. And it was sort of this shameful stigma. And I really, you know, I've really struggled with this idea that, you know, the past still has a way of really messing with us. And it was through writing this poetry book about healing, I thought, well, how do you forgive those people who let these two children, basically, how do you forgive them for excluding them from the family because of their mental health? Or how do you, you know, my parents, my ancestry comes from Polish gypsies, you know, and there's so much that our ancestors have been through. Our grandparents, you know, you don't have to go that far back to really feel like this incredible difference in worlds, how they grew up and what they had to deal with. And I really believe these kinds of seeds of guilt and shame and sort of these painful pasts are left as residue in us. And I'm, you know, I wonder how can you get through that? How can you live with that? And what I was thinking, again, coming back to consciousness, is just, you know, I guess all the past really wants is to be recognized. You know, that's all the past really wants, is to know that it existed. And all these things that our ancestors have been through, shedding some light, spending, you know, giving it some space, some thought, about what they went through and acknowledging that it happened, but then also moving on with your life, you know, not becoming victim to these past ignorances or past, pains, but to keep moving onwards, you know, to keep moving forward and keep saying, you know, keep creating your life according to you and not live through these past pains. So yeah, it's a difficult one.
It is. And it's, I think it's one we need to talk about more often, but I love that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm so eager to read your book. I'm going to make sure I finish it
today.
Thank you. Because I got it. I was like, I got to finish it.
All right. Appreciate it.
Anytime. As we wrap up here, I want to talk about your writing process. I'm very curious. I'm a bit of a nerd with this. So sure. I think I have a different writing process than many people, especially because yeah, my poems, they just sort of spontaneously come to me, and I have my like Evernote and I write, or I have all these ideas where I'll just journal and I'm like, I'll come back to that. But I'm curious about what your writing process is for nonfiction and poetry.
Sure.
Yeah.
I am, I'm not a morning person, but I have two kids. So what I do, this is like, it's no longer based on, you know, how I feel at the moment. It's like, this has to be structured, otherwise it doesn't get done. But I started waking up 2 years ago, started waking up at 5 o'clock. Every morning I have 2 hours before the kids get up that I literally have this sacred, magical time of that cup of coffee and my laptop. And I get to write some of the best work that, you know, I've ever written is in these 2 small hours. So that's when I really do my sort of proactive work, is in the morning. And after the kids have gone to school and daycare, and I get back and I continue to do proactive work, but not as intensely, you know. And and then the afternoons are mostly for reactive work. So it's, you know, replying to emails and things like that. I don't do a lot of writing in the evening or at the weekends, because it would also conflict with, you know, me spending time with my family. But when it comes to poetry, it's something, you know, like you say, spontaneity, it needs to come from that that place of spontaneity. I'm really old fashioned. Like, I have to have a pen and I have to have a paper, piece of paper to write poetry on. So I have this this little book, and it's literally attached to me wherever I go. And if something comes, I can quickly jot it down, you know, look like a crazy person, just suddenly get on the floor and write down like some idea or something that I've seen. And I really love having that as the spontaneous. But when it comes to the nonfiction book, that needed a lot of structure. I needed to find, I needed to find some freedom in structure. Otherwise, it would have just been all over the place. 70,000 words, you know, nice. Whenever I felt like it, it just, at least for me, it just wouldn't have worked. So yeah, quite different, I guess.
Yeah.
Contrasting. Yeah.
No, it's interesting because that's why I always want to show that to the audience, because sometimes I get a question about how to be a writer, and I'm like, I think everybody has their own unique process. And even if you're going to compare someone like J.K. Rowling to J.R.R. Martin for Game of Thrones, who still has other two books to finish.
Yeah.
It seems to be building as he goes, but I think, you know, a lot of authors would just, they already have the ideas and they find their structure and they operate there. So,
Exactly.
Yeah. So make sure you grab Cez's book. I'm going to put that in the show notes, and I'm also going to give you a chance to talk about where people can find you and what you're working on.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tayo. Thank you.
You're welcome. So what's the next book?
Do you know, I'm so excited to write the next book, but I can't decide which one it is, which one should come first. I've been struggling with getting through winter in Denmark, as a southern hemisphere girl, is the hardest thing. So I'm kind of thinking of something along those lines, but also this idea of grounding and belonging. Mostly about belonging. I think this would be a book that could do a lot of good for others. So yeah.
I love it.
To be confirmed.
To be confirmed, TBC. Yeah. We'll have to follow up with you. So where can people find you in social media?
Yeah, so I haven't been on social media for a good few years while I was writing this book, and I was actually working in social media, so I didn't have a personal account. So I've just started. So be kind. And I'm on I'm on Cez Chris Jansen on Instagram, and the website is CezChrisJansen.com.
Okay, CezChrisJansen.com. Yes. We'll put that in the show notes. All right. Well, then the last question that I have for you is my mission statement reframed as a question. And my mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. So how do you, Cez, use your difference to make a difference?
So my difference, I would say, is rebellion, you know, and I'm planning on making sure as many people as possible create a little rebellion in their own life. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I love it. Planning on making sure people create as much rebellion.
Anarchy.
Yes, anarchy is here. Look at that, Cez. Thank you so much. This has been an amazing discussion, and it's all because of all the authenticity you shared. So I just want to thank you for doing that. I really feel humbled.
And thank you for everything you're doing at the moment, Tayo. You're really setting a bar for us. You know, rather unique individuals. It's awesome. It's awesome stuff.
Thank you. I'm really humbled to hear that. Well, ladies, gentlemen, and gender non-conforming, till next time, use a difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.